Matt Bell was filled with hope as he waited shoulder to shoulder with thousands of others outside the Colorado State Capitol in January 2019.
As a member of the LGBT community, it's pretty landmark to have an openly gay man be governor of Colorado. So very excited to see what he does for the state.
The Denver Gay Men's Chorus serenaded the crowd to celebrate the inauguration of Governor Jared Polis.
Congratulations.
It was a historic milestone for queer Coloradans and the nation as an openly gay governor was sworn in for the first time.
From Grand Junction to Yuma, from Trinidad to Fort Collins, we as a people have decided that there is no reason to let our differences divide us.
Since Inauguration Day, Polis has regularly signed bills to support or protect LGBTQ plus people, like the law that offers a third non-binary sex identifier on Colorado driver licenses and ID cards, or the law that bans so-called conversion therapy. But the Colorado of today is very different than it used to be. 3 decades ago, the state did not have any laws that protected queer folks. Voters had approved an anti-LGBTQ plus ballot measure that stripped them of these rights, a decision that sparked a historic court battle for equality. I'm Stephanie Daniel, and this is The Colorado Dream, Ending the Hate State. Colorado is considered one of the most LGBTQ plus friendly states in the country, but it wasn't always this accepting. This series investigates one of the darkest times in the state's recent history and the activism and legislation that followed. We'll share the stories of LGBTQ plus people and the allies who want to make the Centennial State a welcoming place for all. This is Episode 1, The Hate State. There were times, not too long ago, that queer Coloradans felt unsafe living here. In the early 90s, Colorado had become known as the hate state after voters approved an amendment to the Constitution that prohibited protection for LGBTQ plus people. But the new law created a backlash as gay people and their allies organized and went on to the country's highest court to fight discrimination and injustice. This season, we travel around northern Colorado to see how the hate state has evolved by examining some of today's biggest issues, like organizing safe pride events, access to medical care, parental rights, and the impact a gay governor has had on state policies and laws. There's no better window into this long and arduous fight for LGBTQ plus rights than Glenda Russell's cluttered research room in Boulder. This is where KUNC investigative reporter Scott Franz starts our story.
Hi, Scott.
Hey, Glenda. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good, thanks.
Good to meet you. It's
good to meet you, too.
In here, Coloradans don't just learn about the setbacks and victories. They can feel them. And they get a perspective that was missing from newspaper headlines.
Gay people were objectified, talked about in all kinds of ways. A lot of lies were promulgated.
Glenda brings this history to life in ways that few others can. As a psychologist who did a groundbreaking study on how an anti-gay ballot measure affected queer Coloradans psychologically, she has a personal stake in it.
In those file cabinets behind you, a bunch of the actual political rhetoric that was put out. And it was pretty awful stuff to read.
Glenda says as hurtful as the material is, it's important to preserve it.
And I'm really a curious person, and I just kept looking and thinking, somebody's got to be saving this. So then I started actually collecting. My late wife used to say, I think you're really a hoarder.
Her biggest, darkest, and most important file takes us back to the early 1990s, when Colorado voters passed an anti-gay state law called Amendment 2. It repealed anti-discrimination ordinances passed by Boulder, Aspen, and Denver, blocked future protections, and earned the state an unenviable nickname, the Hate State. But it also sparked a landmark legal battle and changed the lives of thousands of queer Coloradans.
The Amendment 2 decision by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1996 will certainly go down as the Supreme Court decision that changed how LGBT people were talked about. And that was a sea change.
This was only 30 years ago, but Colorado was a much different place back then. Lyft tickets in Aspen were less than $50. Republicans controlled the state house, and the state's population was almost half of what it is today. So how did a state that today is celebrated as one of the most friendly in the country for LGBTQ people, and led by a gay governor, once earn itself a reputation as one of the least friendly? To set the stage, we need to leave Glenda's research room and roll the tape. In the weeks before the vote for Amendment 2, in the fall of 1992, a videotape began making its way around the churches of Colorado. It was called The Gay Agenda.
The gay agenda today in the media is trying to put out a message that the majority of the gay community is a loving and caring and monogamous group of people.
Their battle cry, we're here, we're queer, get used to us.
The tape uses ominous music and unnamed studies.
Studies show that male homosexuals average between 20 and 106 partners every year.
And generally unattributed and unverifiable statements. The video claimed gay people were politically devious, plotting special laws to get special rights. 4,000 copies of the VHS tape circulated around Colorado, from a church in Steamboat Springs to a college Republican meeting in Golden. When Glenda Russell heard it, she was alarmed.
Outright lies, lots of distortion.
And she grew concerned about the upcoming vote on Amendment 2.
And I thought, you know, we're going to lose this election. And we're going to lose it because this really is garden variety American homophobia at this point in time. And this is going to be very easy for the campaign that's promoting Amendment 2 to tap into.
Partially as a response to the cities of Aspen, Denver, and Boulder passing new laws to protect lesbian, gay, and bisexual people, Amendment 2 prohibited the entire state from doing just that. The ballot measure essentially sanctioned discrimination against queer people. It would be okay to be fired from a job because of their sexuality or be denied housing. And a man named Will Perkins would be the one to tap into films like The Gay Agenda to get it passed.
5, 6, 7. It's Monday, February 10th, 1997.
Will Perkins was so famous in Colorado in the 1990s, archivists from the State History Museum paid him a visit to record his memories about Amendment 2 while they were still fresh.
Stan Olliner and Karen Main in Colorado Springs, Colorado, interviewing Will Perkins of Coloradoans for Family Values.
Colorado for Family Values was the committee that formed out of Colorado Springs to support the amendment and get it on the ballot. Perkins was a car dealer and one of the founders who was coordinating the ground game.
I never ran into anybody that says, I hate homosexuals, where do I sign? It was a matter of special privilege position based on how they had sex, for whatever reason.
To help convince the public to pass Amendment 2, Perkins and his campaign heavily relied on tabloid-style propaganda, portraying same-sex attracted people as sexual deviants.
The tabloid was instrumental because it was something that anyone that was interested could sit down and certainly see from our perspective what the issues were and how to vote.
The same kinds of propaganda and themes used in the Gay Agenda film were now in print. During this time, the AIDS epidemic was a big deal, and in 1992, it became the number one cause of death for U.S. men ages 25 to 44. People were scared, and Perkins and his group tapped into this fear. Their tabloid included a full page stigmatizing the gay community over the disease. The decision to print the paper would be revisited a few years later at the United States Supreme Court. In the days and hours before Election Day, volunteers carried the newspapers to homes.
We printed up, as I recall, some 800,000.
And in November 1992, it was time to vote. Coloradans went to the polls to decide the race between Bill Clinton and George H.W. Bush, as well as the fate of Amendment 2. As the polls closed, Glenda Russell drove down to Pueblo to attend what was initially billed as a party to celebrate the defeat of Amendment 2.
As more and more numbers came in, it was clear that Amendment 2 was going to pass. And I was sort of a little stunned, not surprised.
The anti-gay measure passed with 53% of the vote.
I remember seeing a man I knew whom I respected who was crying, and I just thought, oh, wow, this is just going to be going all over the place.
For Will Perkins in Colorado Springs, it was a good night. He invited supporters into his dealership for the watch party.
I didn't get to bed till about 3 o'clock that morning. Boy, that was a great night.
For others, though, it wasn't a great night. When the election results were final the next morning, many residents were shocked and outraged. Letters started pouring into the newsroom at the Rocky Mountain News in Denver. Frank Berndt of Boulder called Amendment 2 supporters bigots. Donna Garcia of Aurora wrote she was appalled and angry. "I guess we don't really believe in liberty and justice for all," she wrote. Glenda had started her career as a psychologist at the time. She noticed something disturbing the Monday after the election.
My first client of the day was a lesbian woman who was talking about her concerns in her relationship with another woman and the concerns around how out were they going to be in the aftermath of this election.
So Glenda started a study that would become the first time in America someone had set out to understand how a ballot measure targeting a group of people affected them psychologically. She sent a questionnaire to more than 600 queer Coloradans asking what impact the election had on their mental health. The responses were troubling.
A lot of grief, a lot of shock, a lot of anger, a lot of I'm going to go in the closet, I'm coming out of the closet, a lot of fear. One of the things that people would say, I was sitting at the stoplight and I was looked to the car on the right of me and I looked to the car on the left of me and I thought, did you vote for Amendment 2? Did you vote for Amendment 2? And this sense of how can I be safe here?
The passage of Amendment 2 sent shockwaves through Colorado's queer and trans communities. People were frightened and upset. Some even left the state. But many folks were also empowered, including Larry Brown. He felt this pain, and like others, Larry was bewildered and angry.
There was fight or flight, you know. Can you fight this? No, it's already passed. Do you want to leave? Oh, yeah. Can you leave? No. So what are you going to do?
Coming up, we'll learn more about the impact of Amendment 2 and the backlash against it.
The hate state is just such a large, damning moniker.
Then, the highest court in the land weighs in. That's after the break.
In the NoCo is KUNC's news and culture podcast. It's a great way to stay informed on the issues that matter most to our Colorado communities.
When people have the opportunity to help in a disaster, especially when they're fellow survivors, this can actually help with their own mental health and emotional recovery after the disaster.
I'm In the NoCo host Erin O'Toole. Follow the podcast for free at KUNC.org or anywhere you like to listen to podcasts.
I'm Stephanie Daniel, and this is The Colorado Dream, Ending the Hate State, from KUNC News. When Amendment 2 passed on November 3, 1992, many LGBTQ+ Coloradans, like Larry Brown, went into a state of mourning. But they also started planning a movement. Here's my colleague Scott Franz.
Larry Brown already knew hate. Where he grew up in southern New Mexico, being open about his sexuality was not an option.
It was a totally closeted world, and you were taking your life in your hands if you came out, frankly. In employment, in day-to-day activities, just everything about it, it was you kept things under wraps.
When Brown moved to Colorado in 1978 to start a graduate program at the University of Colorado, the school had an LGBTQ plus focused support office, which held a monthly meeting off of campus at a local church.
It was the first community that I'd ever been part of.
So years later, when Amendment 2 passed and gay people were vilified by a political campaign, Brown and thousands of other LGBTQ plus folks around the country chose to fight. Brown became active. He became proud. Amendment 2 helped him find community. And he would eventually find more community with a group called the Rainbow Elders in Boulder County, where he serves as a role model for younger LGBTQ plus people. Amendment 2, he says, was a wake-up call.
And then it passed, and we all went into collective mourning. That could happen here.
Soon, Colorado had its moniker, the Hate State.
We were the dumbfounded state, pretty much.
Brown remembers the boycotts that rocked the tourism and conference industries. CBS News reported that Amendment 2 cost Colorado more than $38 million in lost conventions alone. Even Hollywood legend Barbara Streisand called for a boycott.
The moral climate there is no longer acceptable.
The Hate State name woke people up. It activated people, from pride events to political activities. Brown found himself looking to the legal system, hoping it would declare it unconstitutional.
All I can hang my hat on is that there's a judicial system that will help me or advocate for me in some way, if it comes to that.
And it wasn't long before that epic legal battle began.
We went to the district court in Denver, filed an injunction action, seeking to get it enjoined before it officially went into effect.
Gene Dabofsky was the lead attorney and legal strategist in the effort to overturn Amendment 2. When it passed, she was ready to go.
With plaintiffs who were gay men or lesbians, we also had the Boulder Valley School District, the cities of Denver, Boulder, and Aspen.
Just as Will Perkins became the public face of the forces that conjured up and promoted Amendment 2, Dabofsky became the public champion of the legal effort to dismantle it, though she wasn't alone.
All over the country, people were calling, what can we do to help?
Dabofsky already was well known in Colorado. At age 37 in 1979, she was appointed to the Colorado Supreme Court. She was the court's first woman, where she served until 1987, when she went into private practice. A few years later, this case, Romer versus Evans, put her in the spotlight. She reflected on her four-year legal battle in an oral history interview with the Boulder Public Library. Her interview helps answer the question, how did Amendment 2 come about?
We put on evidence that explained that these various, mostly far-right religious groups, had begun an anti-gay rights effort after communism basically went away, which was in the late 1980s. And they lost anti-communism as a means of raising money.
She found evidence that the people behind the amendment came to Colorado Springs from Southern California to work at a 57-acre business development for religious organizations. The Hate State Amendment, she says, was really about fundraising.
Colorado had almost no law that protected gay men and lesbians from discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. But the religious organization said that there was a gay rights agenda and that it needed to be blocked in Colorado.
Dabofsky and the attorneys primarily argued that gay people deserved equal protection under the 14th Amendment, attacking the idea that the government was creating new rights for gay men and lesbian women. She won the trial in Denver District Court and prevailed in the Colorado Supreme Court. And to no one's surprise, the case eventually was taken up by the Supreme Court of the United States. Dabofsky led the arguments.
The Supreme Court had more requests for passes to get into that argument than they'd ever had for any case in the court's history. The courtroom was just jam-packed for the argument.
Dabowski says her favorite moment of the case came on October 10, 1995, when she tangled with the often combative conservative Associate Justice Antonin Scalia. Scalia tried to trip her up over legal citations, but Dabowski was prepared.
Where does it say that in the Colorado Supreme Court?
It says that on page B-3, D-24.
Well, for years, when I argued cases, I'd write down on the margin the page number something important was on. Never been asked about.
David or
and so he starts reading a sentence.
Protective statutes, regulations, orders in the future.
And I could say, no, it's not that sentence. It's the one above.
Yes, and it refers back to the first sentence. It says that the immediate objective of Amendment 2 is, at a minimum, to
and he was furious. He slammed his book shut and hurled it at the little thing that goes right in front of him.
Special protections accorded to homosexuals and not to the public at large.
I think we're having trouble a little bit with semantics. One of the difficulties.
But that's one of those little things that you think, oh, how could I be so lucky?
On the day of this appearance in front of the Supreme Court, Dabowski made sure to bring the 8-page anti-gay tabloid that Amendment 2 supporter Will Perkins had spread around the state. Perkins said it was the key to passing the law. Dabowski said it was key to striking it down.
That little brochure was in its own little plastic pocket that was part of the briefs, not just sitting down in the record somewhere, because I thought that proved that this was impermissible bias.
The SCOTUS decision was announced on May 20th, 1996.
Oh, you get this call, and the clerk of the U.S. Supreme Court calls at 8 a.m. on a Monday morning and said, basically, today the U.S. Supreme Court affirmed the decision in Romer versus Evans. Well, that meant we'd won. And I just gasped. I couldn't believe it.
The court wrote that Amendment 2, quote, classifies homosexuals not to serve a legislative end, but to make them unequal to everyone else.
The decision was written by Justice Kennedy, and it said, basically, there's never been a law as bad as this, that it sweeps too broadly and it targets a narrow group and reflects impermissible bias, and there's no rational basis for it.
The so-called hate state amendment was dead. Back in her research room, psychologist Glenda Russell says the case helped spread awareness about queer people. The decision was historic and served as a foundation for future legal victories.
All of the decisions that have been sort of supportive of LGBT people since then really, really come from that decision.
Glenda says the Amendment 2 saga also affected queer Coloradans in very personal ways.
We really can and often do learn from the hardest things that happened to us. We learned because people came out of the closet, they met other gay people.
But the fight for equality hasn't ended in Colorado or beyond. Glenda points to anti-LGBTQ bills being sponsored in dozens of states as a reason to remember Colorado's history.
The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. We have to step back and see that whole arc. If we don't see that whole arc, every one of these events feels like it's overwhelming, it's overpowering, it's going to stop us in our tracks, we're never going to be able to move forward, but that's not true.
As Scott reported, in the months before Amendment 2 passed, one of the key pieces of propaganda making its way around Colorado was the film The Gay Agenda. The anti-gay rights video featured edited scenes from gay pride events.
A gay pride parade should be a kind of social political statement. In fact, it's outrageously sexual. It's not just a celebration. There's a defiance about it.
This video promoted homophobia and discrimination. But there was defiance, a rebellion against these efforts, against the hate state. And rather than push LGBTQ plus people and allies back or further into hiding, Amendment 2 galvanized a movement. It helped fuel pride events in Colorado and around the country. On the next episode of The Colorado Dream, Ending the Hate State, As the number of Pride celebrations grow across northern Colorado, it's still a struggle to hold these events.
You don't get to cancel Pride. You don't have to run it, but we're going to go ahead and take it. Our community deserves a Pride event.
That's next time on The Colorado Dream. The Colorado Dream, Ending the Hate State, is a production from KUNC News. It's hosted and produced by me, Stephanie Daniel. This episode was written and reported by Scott Franz, editing by Sean Corcoran. The theme song was composed by Jason Patton. Michelle Rado sound designed and mixed the episode. The music is from Epidemic Sound and Blue Dot Sessions. Jennifer Coombs is the digital editor. Special thanks to Trayvell Anderson, Lee Patterson, Jen De La Fuente, Kim Race, Robert Legia, Gabe Allen, and Mike Arnold. Tammy Terwelp is KUNC's president and CEO. Oral histories contributing to this episode were accessed from the Carnegie Library for Local History, Boulder, Colorado, and from the History Colorado Archives. To see photos of the people included in this episode and learn more about the terminology we used, go to kunc.org/ColoradoDream or check out the show notes for a link.